Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. We're in for a weird ride today.
It's kind of, well, yeah, that was Sarah. I'm Danny. You know us. We're your partners in Wine, Crime, and Time. And we're sort of doing a different episode today because we feel like we get such good reception when people love when we tackle stuff in the news that's sort of going on because it's like, we need to talk about this. This is like a smorgasbord of things, stories you might not totally be knowing about, but things that we think are like kind of interesting and tie in to the true crime vibe that we are all about.
Yeah. I mean, first up, I feel like we have to talk about the Staircase trailer.
Yes.
It just dropped. I have a confession to make. I never finished the Staircase on Netflix. I have tried so many times, but I feel like they almost, most of the documentaries, I feel like, I don't know, like, I feel like they made his case in reverse. Like, they made him seem guilty. And so now I just don't care if he's supposedly innocent.
They sort of, it was giving like an hour long, like Dateline. But then I was like, why am I going to watch the rest of this if you sort of like signed, sealed, delivered it? And I guess it was kind of like an attempt to make you be like working backwards and questioning things and stuff like that.
Right. Where I feel like usually they do the opposite where they're like, no, he's not. This is why he can't have done it. And here's why they're saying he did it.
Exactly. But I mean, now it doesn't even matter because with Toni Collette and Colin Firth on HBO Max, these are all my favorite words coming together for this Staircase miniseries.
It honestly looks good. I don't know. It does look really good. I'll probably try to watch it. I will finish it. I think I have one episode left, which is like the worst thing.
Well, because you know what we should do? You should finish that and maybe I'll even rewatch it. And then we watch this and we can do like a little comparison and situation with that. And you know what is interesting too? Hi, all these Emmy and Oscar winners jumping in a true crime vehicle.
I know. Get out of our lane.
Or Tony or Renee, or come on our podcast.
Yeah, come on the show. Oh, my God. I actually did. I did start watching The Thing About Pam. I didn't get very far, I'll be honest. But number one, I thought the casting was like spot on for like Betsy and Russ. They were kind of dead ringers. Renee, I have no comment on. But the choices in that show are very like campy and kind of weird. It's a particular vibe. Like, it's a fictional show that's almost narrated as a Dateline show, but like a Dateline show in which Pam is the main character. Like, it's very weird.
Yeah, they did a lot of takes. I actually haven't read that many reviews about it, and I don't feel like a lot of people are like talking about it, so I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but Judy Greer, if she wants to chat with us, that'd be really fun.
Yeah,
that's
we'll put that out there into the universe, too.
And until she says no, then I'll give all of my... I'll talk about the show more, honestly. But I know, but it was... I feel like, because right now it's also... That's like the major, like, a network jumping into a true crime miniseries, because before it's always like a Netflix or an HBO Max and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is on like regular TV?
Like NBC,
NBC?
Ugh, I had to watch it on Peacock, whatever.
Oh, I do love Peacock. I do love Peacock.
I think I just have beef with NBC in general because the Bravo app is so fucking horrible. Like, people on Twitter talk shit about HBO Max, and I'm like, have you tried to watch one episode of any Bravo show?
I think they are doing that slightly, so everyone just joins Peacock, even though they don't have the newest ones on there.
Peacock doesn't work either.
I know. I don't know, not great. But I do love Peacock has some good, if you guys like crime dramas. The Capture I just watched is insanely
good. Ooh, is it fictional?
It is fictional. It is about like CCTV footage. And there's a main twist with that. Well, CCTV footage is like how like in London, everyone like is on camera all the time. And it's an interesting thing that they do with it. And
that's interesting.
It hooked me.
I started watching Suspicion. I will say this is going to get me canceled, this opinion, but like, I hate when I'm reading or watching, mostly reading because there's like a delay, but like when I go to watch or read a thriller and then all of a sudden it's British, I just get annoyed. I'm like, I want to relate. I'm like, I don't want to have to Google these fucking words. Like, One time I was reading a thriller and they kept referencing something called a Zimmer. And I was like, what? And you know, the first time you read a word, you're like, ah, whatever. I'm just going to ignore it. And then like the 50th time, I'm like, God damn it. What is this thing? I had to Google it. It's a walker. So just like, I just hate when it's like surprise British thrillers, because then I have to go Google a bunch of words.
It is funny. I am the polar opposite. When I turn on a thriller and I'm like, this is in Maine? What? I'm like, I can drive to Maine. I'm like, I cannot hop over to London right now and like be captivated.
That's so funny. I will say though, like, well, it's weird because when I started watching Pieces of Her, I was like, wait, they're not British? Like, I was very confused too.
I know, that's with our girl, Slaughter.
Yes, I know. I was like expecting them to have accents. I've been trained. Murders only happen in England, according to streaming services.
According to streaming, but according to our first story, that is very much not the case, because there is an update about California.
Yes. I feel like in the U.S., all the famous murders are like California, Colorado.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
We got a lot in Jersey, too.
First degrees of murder. Yeah, Jersey has some, yeah.
Yes. But no, this is a big one. I mean, it's not a big update because it's sort of maintaining the status quo, but it has to do with the Manson murders. A couple of days ago, actually, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, rejected Leslie Van Houten's parole review. So the parole board was recommending that she be released after serving 50 years in prison for her role in the Manson murders. But in his review, Newsom said Leslie, quote, currently poses an unreasonable danger to society if released from prison at this time. And he also said that while Leslie has shown, quote, increased maturity and rehabilitation, end quote, she still has gaps in insight that make her a danger to society. As a note, she is 72 years old, and this is the fifth time that a California governor has rejected her release.
I know. I feel like now no one wants to be the governor.
Exactly. I mean, and that's what her lawyer is saying. Like, her lawyer is basically saying that he's doing this for political reasons, and Leslie has a spotless disciplinary record in prison. And like, look, I get it. You don't want to be the governor who lets out a Manson girl.
Yeah. That's
Even if she arguably should be let out because she's 72 and Charles Manson is dead. And like, what's she going to do? Besides going Cameo.
But then I feel like it's always the circle game. Cause I mean, I'm sure her lawyer's like, what is she going to do? But then the governor's like, what is she going to do?
That's true. And well, we should cover, I feel like that happens in at least the fictional thrillers, but also I'm sure it's happened where like they release someone from prison and then they go murder someone. That could be.
Oh my God. That case. SVU episode with the kid from Shameless.
Yes. Oh my God. Classic.
That was insane. Yeah.
But back to Leslie, she's had 21 parole hearings since 1982, which would kind of kill me inside because of like the false hope.
I know. And I get like, when do you get to the point where you're just like,
I'm good.
Yeah. I guess you keep on trying for it. But
I guess. Yeah. And most parole boards have denied her, but five since 2016 have recommended her release. But the California governor, or Newsom, I think, has rejected her releases in 2019, 2020, and again last November. And she's currently serving a life sentence for her role in the LaBianca murders, which was she and a bunch of the other Manson girls, the day after killing Sharon Tate, I think, killed a grocer and his wife and like smeared their blood on the walls, which was really gruesome. But for what it's worth, She was not involved with Sharon Tate's murder.
And I'm sure her lawyer is really clinging to that. They're like, yeah. Not the most famous one. And you're like, okay, but still.
I know it's a really second name in the hyphenated name.
I know. That's a really hard situation. And I feel like if she was denied now, I mean, I don't really know. And it's been rejected 2019, 2020, 2021. Like, it's just going to keep on. I can't imagine it going a different direction.
I mean, yeah, good luck to Leslie. But I just, yeah. I don't see anybody wanting to be the governor who frees Manson girl. So
Exactly. You know. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll keep updates on that. But
right
I feel
or wrong,
like,
that's kind of what I think.
It's just the objective fact of it that no one is going to be wants that on them, especially, you know, because anytime you're anything of re-election or anything.
Yeah,
even though
exactly.
In the long run, everyone's like, every person with the governor's like, can you just help us not have to spend so much money to live here? But they're like, God. But I didn't do this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like her lawyer's like, oh, it's political. And it's like, yeah, exactly. But
yeah,
what are you going to do? And in another random case, to be honest, but it was on People Magazine, so shouts out. They actually do have good crime coverage. I remember, like, they covered this one case of, like, this couple who mysteriously died on vacation.
I was thinking, because we, remember that. Yeah. And they really, they not only highlight the ones that are very much gaining attention, I feel like they're doing really good investigation on their own. So good on them. I guess, yeah. Works for us, because then I get to read about celebrities and crime all in the same place.
We love it. And do a little crossword. It's fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun. But so this is a case that is wrapping up probably very soon. Ronnie Leon Hyde is going on trial. He's a former youth pastor. Guys. Oh, sorry. I'm like, don't trust a youth pastor. Easy for me to say, but you
but know. We alternate, because we did the really bad youth pastor with Judge Faith Jenkins, and then we did the good one with the Betsy episode, and now we're just back to, you know, we're for every good one, there's a bad one, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. But so he's pleading guilty to charges of murder and dismemberment. But let's back it up a bit. So it all starts with the 16-year-old Fred Paul Laster. He disappeared, and his dismembered torso was discovered in a dumpster in 1994 at, like, a gas station dumpster. His head, hands, and legs had been cut off, so it was literally just a torso. Ugh. And a woman walking her dog saw it in the dumpster. And I also just am like, what was the rest of her day like?
Oh, God. I don't even know. But also, thank God in a way that she found it, because if it was just thrown out, I feel people would have, there would be no trace.
Yeah, no, I think there would have been, like, no resolution to this, because it took so long to get resolved.
Which is shocking, because of, as Sarah will go on, all the details and evidence that was there.
It didn't seem like they were ever like, we don't know what happened. We don't know who could have done this. They were kind of like, well, we kind of know who it is. I don't really understand. But investigators also found blood-smeared items like a flannel shirt, plastic bags, two knives, a mattress topper that also appeared to have bone and hair tissue on it, too. And Laster's family told police that Ronnie Leon Hyde, who was this youth pastor, had picked up Fred earlier that week, and they never saw him again.
Insane.
So I'm kind of like, so you had the guy. Like, what?
You saw the last time this child was seen alive with the person who was suspicious, but here we are.
I know. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, they had nothing to arrest him on or anything, but it's just weird.
And I'm sure it was also the energy of, like, beloved man in the community and all that stuff.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, I don't know. Well, I don't know if this guy was a beloved pastor or, like, the creepy pastor, because he kind of seems like the latter.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. So in 1995, Laster's family filed a report with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office because they hadn't seen him in 8 months. Here's a fun note. They thought he was traveling with a band, and that's why it took him so long to report him missing.
I don't know if it was, like, because they didn't have this detail, like, was it a religious band, because it's why the youth pastor would pick him up, or was it just a band that he was a big fan? Like, was he a fish hat? You know what I mean? There's no,
yeah. That's, I know. When I saw that, I had to check the dates. I was like, oh, yeah, 70s vibes, like, totally, no further questions. And then I was like, hold up, that was the 90s? Like, that's a little...
Right, and like 8 months is very intense. But if it was his family, if his family thought maybe it was, like, his nature, who knows, but... Yeah, very long time to be missing.
Yeah. And so this kind of got invigorated in 2014, because the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children published information about the dismembered torso on its website. So then Laster's family saw this, and they contacted the Columbia County Sheriff's Office. So then in 2016, familial DNA confirmed that the torso was Laster's.
And this is about 20 years after the fact.
Crazy.
Or over 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. And then after that, investigators started looking at Hyde, who was an acquaintance of the family and a known creeper, at least by the family.
Yeah, and especially the kids.
Yeah, right. So Fred's sister recalled that one time she woke up in the middle of the night and found Hyde nude and attempting to wake up Fred. Gross. And his brother alleged that this guy had a set of knives consistent with the ones found in the dumpster. Also said he'd been taking nursing classes, which would, I guess, give him, like, some additional knowledge of dismemberment.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they teach you how the body works. So I guess that's right. The only tie-in together.
I guess because, you know, where the joints are and stuff. Yeah. Like, who knows? I can't even, what's the word? Not dismember a chicken, but you know what I'm talking about?
I'm vegetarian. I don't know what the fuck you're
like
talking about.
Like, cut a chicken. I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
There's a word for it. I can't think of it. And now I'm like, why don't we say dismember? I guess filet? That's needlessly graphic.
Yeah, because that would be, that would ruin the meat. The
yeah,
meat
you're right. That would kind of ruin
company.
Dinner. Kind yeah. of damper. Put a damper on it.
Yeah.
So then in 2016, investigators used items from Hyde's trash to DNA test, and it matched the DNA found on that flannel shirt in the dumpster. So he was arrested, his property was searched, you know, bing, bang, boom, got him. The trial is expected to last about a week, and I don't like his odds in prison.
Oh, no. But also, I don't like him, so...
No, I don't think he's in for a good time, I shall say.
No, but he had 20 years of fucking no consequences, so, you know, here we...
That's what I don't get. Yeah, I'm always like, I can't... I'm like, how do people, like, you know, who do we do? John List, who was on the run for almost 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Living a double life. It's like... Anytime I tell one lie, I have to plan it out in my head for like weeks in advance and like remind myself that that's the lie. Like, how do you do that?
Or as Sarma would say, no, he wasn't on the run. He was on the run? I wasn't on the run.
I wasn't on the run. I just disappeared. I wasn't talking to anybody. No. Like,
what? No, you're crazy.
And was like hiding my identity. I love that girl.
Oh, what a moment. But it is interesting because all of this was solved, the case we just discussed, because of a website where they published information and then DNA coming in. And Jorge sent us this really interesting article that we're wrapping up with, kind of as like, just to like let you guys know what is happening in the crime world, I guess, and also as like a conversation about it, because there are these now, I don't know how else to describe it besides like rich people wanting, who are really obsessed with true crime, wanting to solve crime. So the whole thing, this is from the New York Times, and it's like, when the police can't afford to solve cold cases using DNA databases, deep-pocketed donors can. And this is because like DNA testing costs about $5,000, which I thought the government pays for DNA testing, but I guess not always.
Like, what is all the police budget going to? I know what it's going to. It's going to militarizing, but whatever.
Yeah, no, but that's a funny thing because like a lot of this article, and I mean, LOL, and please save us the DMs if you describe it. Like, they're always like, the poor underfunded. I'm like, y'all are underfunded. Have you seen an infographic? You guys are not underfunded. But here
we
are.
Oh my God.
But the money also
goes.
I love
that we're out here being like, have you seen the Instagram infographic?
No, like we're all broke. We're all just on a floating rock about to like combust. but, and also building up the familial tree with the DNA also costs money. But this entire trend of rich people donating money, I guess, it was really kicked off one major one through LinkedIn, which is interesting enough. And not what? Because they were posting like, hey, who wants to find this? The sheriff's office in Tennessee posted on LinkedIn, identify the victim of a 1978 Tennessee murder. So they did this because they wanted to try new technology, the DNA testing, to attempt to solve this crime. So 1978, this was a few years ago, so it's over 42 years with no leads. And it was inspired, if any of you guys are thinking back to like what this might remind you of, the Tennessee office was inspired by the technology that pioneered the Golden State Killer being captured.
Yeah, I feel like that was such a like remarkable, I don't know.
Truly capture. A what the fuck capture. Like, cause it's like, you were like, how did this even work down? So also, I mean, like in case anybody is not familiar with it, the quickest summary of why this correlates, the Golden State Killer committed 13 murders and dozens of rapes in California and was unsolved for decades until FBI decided in 2018 to use DNA evidence to build out the perpetrator's likely family tree. So the familial DNA being used for this, which resulted in IDing and prosecuting a 72-year-old former cop.
It's always... I'll keep my mouth shut. That is big Golden State Killer vibes.
Oh, major, major. And so it is like they were able to do this by the DNA being available everywhere and then testing that DNA. So
also, I feel like there was some podcaster. I want to say it was like Martinis on Murder. That was like their theory all along. They were like... they were kind of like, it has to be a police officer to be able to like evade capture and like know certain things.
Oh,
and I think that's a theory also that that seems likely about the Long Island serial killer.
Yeah, 100%.
And I remember one time I was doing our trivia on Not Another True Crime, and I was trying to make the question like, which of the following serial killers like did not work in law enforcement? And I was like trying to Google all the regular, like, you know,
yeah,
hitters. And I was like, damn, I can't find one.
I can't. Yeah,
like they do for sure exist, but like the ones that were coming easily to me, I was like, oh, this guy had a brief stint, like so did this guy, like let me just trash this question.
When they learn like, oh, no one checks DMs here, I know what exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want a million DMs being like, well, actually.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So with forensic genetic genealogy, one thing that they were able to do this, how to build this out, was through GEDmatch, which is an online gathering place for people to upload DNA results, kind of like from like 23andMe and Ancestry.
That seems sketch.
I
feel like you shouldn't be able to do that.
Well, there's a expert who's kind of like, this is weird.
Like, is everybody in your family consenting to having their DNA uploaded to the internet? Like, that doesn't seem okay.
No, not at all. So the Tennessee office could not afford it. So this genetics lab called Othram was trying to get money from the internet, which aren't we all just trying to get money from the internet? The founder, David Middleman, said it's basically like a Kickstarter. This article, I will say, they really were working on the pitches everywhere. They said it was basically like a Kickstarter, but instead of a product, you're getting justice. We're crowdfunding for justice. And I'm like, crowdfunding for justice is coming to CBS this fall.
I'm sorry.
Like, that is a Shonda Rhimes show if I've ever heard of one before.
Crowdsourcing for justice.
And when I was first reading this article, I was kind of like, because they were like, they needed $5,000 and this random wellness coach donated like $4,000 because it was the rest of it. And I was like, what the fuck? But we're going to circle back to her because she's honestly so much in this article and kind of why I was like, oh, we should cover this because she's had some layers to it. And I feel like she kind of does what all of us are like, oh, I think I could do from listening to true crime content.
Right.
So her name is Miss Carla Davis, and she has given in like over the course of like a few years, like 6 years or so, over $100,000 to Othram, this company. So
this is giving me bad vegan vibes.
Yeah. So she was giving, but also, and the person even noted in the article, like she was like, she was donating to it, like it was a charity and not like a venture back startup, to help cold cases, mainly in her home state of Mississippi. And we're also going to get into kind of how, like, she donated this money to sort of pick and choose where they wanted to help out. She is just one of the many amateur DNA detectives. And a lot of them say they were inspired by watching true crime content and consuming true crime content.
What are they're not analyzing the DNA. Like, they're just giving the money, right?
But it's sort of like that thing where it's like, you know, where they're like, okay, but we're now involved in it.
I mean, if I donate to, like, I don't know, the American, like, Heart Society, I'm not a
doctor. You're not a doctor. We are going to circle back to Carla. Carla kind of goes above and beyond all the other people donating later.
Okay.
And I will shout her out for that. So she also was inspired a lot to get more involved in how to help missing people and solving cold cases because her mom died when she was young and she didn't know who her dad was until she did 23andMe 4 decades later.
Wow. I feel like that's a Real Housewives plot line on like so many of the franchises. Oh,
yeah. I feel like I've heard a lot of people railing that like they're adopted or like family's not who the family is and stuff like that. And I mean, I get like, you know, it just 23andMe, I have never done it because I'm like, I don't need to know anything. And also I'm like, I'm Irish. Yeah. What is it going to tell me?
No, I exactly.
I'm Irish and I have bad skin. Like I don't need to spend $75 to spit in a tube to tell me that.
Yeah, I know. I'm also just, once that Golden State Killer thing came out, even though it was not 23andMe, like it was some other service with like different privacy laws or whatever, but I was just kind of like, I don't need my familial DNA floating around. Again, not that I'm a serial killer, but you never know. Got to keep the option open.
Exactly. So something like that. Yeah, so everyone is really involved in this. And she did find out through, and I feel like this kind of ties it in, she didn't find out who her father was from pinging her father, but she found someone who could link to her to link to her.
Yeah.
The dad was dead, but she was like, she felt like she got
killed. Damn, then you have to do a whole that. Now I see how they're investigators, because like you don't find out who your parents are. You have to like, they give you a clue and then you have to solve the mystery.
And also, I mean, she really has had a lot of ties with this. Her daughter's 11-year-old friend was abducted and killed. So she.
Oh, my gosh.
Carla was really, I know. When I was reading this, I was like, who? Carla, what? So she joined this Facebook group after watching YouTube tutorials about genetics. I'm just reading sentences
here. I'm obsessed with that. YouTube tutorials.
I mean, I watch them about how to like iron things. So she's doing more than me. Yeah. And the group is called DNA Detectives. If anybody wants to join, I don't know if it's still around. Which led to her new calling of helping over 200 strangers identifying their unknown parents. So she started just in the parent sector, and like this kind of the DNA detectives, they, for what it's worth, they weren't trying to be like, oh, let's solve crimes. They were like, oh, let's like see how we can find out who's related to everybody. And this isn't just for Ortham, but like rich people have donated over like millions of dollars to causes like this, which people are saying that could help usher in a place where like no crimes or few crimes go unsolved. But only if society is willing to accept and fund DNA places and companies like that, and also, I guess, deal with the, what's that word called? Like, the morality of it, I feel, also needs to be debated.
Yeah. It's definitely, like, ethically questions murky on both sides.
Yeah. And one I just wanted to shout out is there was the Vegas Justice League, which I kind of just like that that's, like, the group name. They've given the company Authorm $45,000. And they have, with that, solved 3 murder rape cases in Vegas, including 2 wow. really tragic ones of teenage girls in 79 and 89.
Wow.
So they kind of are saying, like, we have proven successful Ortham and all these other companies, but, like, they need the money to do it because it's expensive. And just to give you an overview about this company, Ortham, the government, they say that their pitch is like government labs lack the expensive equipment needed to process DNA evidence. I don't know how.
That's probably
like,
true.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm like, I feel like it's always funny. Like whenever you're in a, how Sarmo is tricked into being like, oh, Navy SEALs rake in millions. Someone did DM me saying like, hi, yes. I'm married to someone like that. No.
Someone did DM us. I feel like we should just do like a roundup of great DMs that we got this week at the end of this, because someone did DM us and they were like, hey, you know, if they are doing Navy SEAL stuff, they're not going to tell you. Or like Black Ops shit, they're obviously not going to tell you. Which, yeah, tracks. It helped to hear from someone with a background. But yes. I was like, I don't think I need to have a military background to know to that. And also they were like, yeah, Navy SEALs are not raking in that much money.
And it is funny because kind of like that, because I, whenever I think of like, oh my God, a government office, I'm like, oh, it's so sleek. It's like silver, futuristic. And people are like,
it's like shitty.
We got the same current as you. Yeah. So, like, they can't test on things like cigarette butts, blood stain fabrics, bones, which may be decades old, degraded, or mixed with non-human materials. So, for now, private labs need to do the work of creating genetic profiles and everything like that. And it's like, a very time-consuming. They need experts for it and everything along those lines. And so, a lot of these new companies want to be, like, the one-stop shop for authorities. So, and kind of, like, change the way that they go about solving these cold cases or older cases. The company has received over 400,000 of philanthropic donors. And according to Crunchbase, which is like just like kind of unpacked startups, they've raised over 28 million from institutional investors to corner the market, which is sort of just like insane how much money they have raised. And here is what's kind of interesting and where people start to get into the murky territory of it. A big way they kind of captivate the public to donate is that they have this site called DNA Solves, and it tells the story of crimes with quote unquote catchy names. The New York Times referred them to that. So they'd be like, here's help solve the Christmas tree lady or help solve the angel baby.
Christmas tree lady?
I know, which like, an angel baby. They're very, very, very December-y themed. To encourage people to fund underfunded police departments, which might be an oxymoron, but you know what I mean. It's what this website is saying.
Angel Baby reminds me of that like John Mulaney bit about how the New York Post calls like any child who dies like a beautiful angel.
And it's like a bozo.
Like, any criminal. Yeah. Exactly. The bozo.
Oh, God.
Man. Okay.
And on top of that, I mean, now they have competition because now there's another site, Justice Drive, which does the same thing. So a lot of these sites are popping up. Here's the thing. So on top of money, Ortham also encourages people to donate their DNA, which some people say is kind of because why would you give this company your DNA and not put it in a database? Because it's not like you're doing 23andMe and now it's in a database. You're just giving
it's
this company.
It's not in the database? I don't believe that.
I know. So, well, because, but then it's weird because like now like this company like sort of owns your DNA in their general database and because theirs is built for the purpose of law enforcement. So what they say is that they would just use your DNA to run it against other like evidence that they find.
But why would you do that?
To help, to be like, maybe like your cousin's cousin or something like that might.
Oh my God, you're snitching on your families?
Yes, that's the yes.
Wow.
And so here is kind of, I was glad they included this. So Natalie Ram, who is a law professor at University of Maryland, go Terps, I believe, yes, I believe they are the Terps, expressed concern about the quote unquote public picking and choosing between cases, saying that investigative priorities could be determined by who can donate the most, which, I mean, we see that in so many
fields. Welcome to the world. Rich people, like, run the world. I don't know what she
means. Yeah, so she said that the largest share of cases solved so far with the method tend to involve white female victims, which kind of we've discussed a lot. So missing white women syndrome and everything like that. So that's kind of the cases that the companies are promoting and also the people are donating the most too.
I feel like it's just like such a systemic problem.
Yeah. And also because the existing bias towards prioritizing the white victims, which like we've seen in media, we've seen everywhere, could be compounded by the demographic makeup of the genealogy databases too. Their compositions all heavily skew white and everything like that. And it's kind of, so it kind of gets like a little bit murky with that because it's sort of like, okay, so you're only looking out for these white victims. Where is the extra resources, or where you just aren't giving money to help out victims of color and people who aren't getting the crowdsourcing?
That would be like an interesting grant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know,
because they are also saying like, oh, well, there's less. Like they were like, oh, well, because like someone referenced like, oh, well, we have a lot of black DNA, and it's like because black people are getting arrested more frequently for unnecessary things, and so it's all sort of
like, yeah, it's like that's not
so helpful. No,
like that's not really a point in your favor.
So that's the main, so that was a main issue that she brought up, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And on another level, she's also concerned about kind of what we were referring before, the constitutional privacy of people who never agreed to have their DNA on anything but share it with someone who does.
Right. Like if you get my, first of all, again, I'm not murdering anybody, but like if, I don't know, I'm just like, if you get my DNA onto some fucking site that's shared with law enforcement without talking to anybody, like, I'm sorry, you're not coming to Thanksgiving.
No, right?
I don't care which family member you are, mom, dad.
And also, because I mean, this is now just me talking out of the article. So this is just what I've, something I was thinking about while reading it is like, I feel like because like with money being so invested to this, there's going to be moments where I think they're going to want to like solve a case that might not be 100%. You know what I mean? Or they're like,
no,
this has to match. Like, so it's kind of
you
like,
you think they're going to like fudge it?
Not fudge it, but be like, oh, maybe this could work. I'm just saying like, I want to just think about all the things because like this company is running on money. I mean, every company has. But like in a way, it's kind of like there's interesting layers to it. I don't know if they will go so far as to like to fully fudge it, but I don't know. But people are really into it, so much so, even circling back to the Golden State Killer, an FBI lawyer who worked on it, Steve Kramer, wants to get in on the action. He helped the FBI establish 3 forensic genetic genealogy units across the country, but he left the agency in November to help found a company seeking to automate genealogical research. He said, I don't consider genetic genealogy for just cold cases. We've solved active homicides within weeks. And to his credit, I guess, he says he has a catchphrase that he wants to use for his. He says, we want to take the word serial out of serial killer.
Thank you.
He's ready for Shark Tank.
These people are gearing up for their cable commercial. Like, what's the other thing that they said? I forget.
Oh my God. That's how short
they're ready.
They are ready.
They're ready for their close up.
Yeah. An interesting thing that true crime entertainment and podcasting has kind of gotten in on the action as well. Audio Chuck, an Indiana company with a slate of popular true crime shows. Yeah,
that's like Ashley Flowers, right?
Yeah, so has donated approximately $800,000 to the organization. And also, Ashley Flowers, she has her own nonprofit called Seasons of Justice, which I didn't know she had. And she's raised over $250,000 and had made grants towards 53 unsolved murders.
Wow.
Yeah, so all of that and all of that, for the most part, from what this article says and from what I researched about the companies, the money goes to the DNA evidence running, which is like $5,000, and then the additional fees for family trees to draw their connection.
I mean, I feel like if they have stuff that's untested, like, whatever, I'm for that. I'm for giving money to get it tested in a private lab. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The whole thing of just like having your DNA floating around to be later used by law enforcement. I don't love the implications also, of.
I know. I kind of also, the Golden State Killer FBI agent, I sort of, not that cold cases would go unsolved, but I enjoyed his messaging of like the priority of like these active cases, A,
yes,
to solve them quicker. That's and then also true. B, too, because it's not a picking and choosing. It's like, okay, this is happening now. Let us solve this. And it kind of gives it to where it's needed more than just like, oh, there's this story about an angel baby. Let me solve that over like a bunch of other missing people who are needed.
Sure, that's true. All right, so let's go back to Ms. Davis, the queen of this article.
Truly.
So after she donated $4,000, she said that this case caught her eye. It was called the Talladega Super Speedway Jane Doe. I mean, all right, that wins.
That's an eye-catching name.
Definitely. So what happened was the decomposing remains of a white woman of average height were found 9 years before in the yard of an abandoned house near this famous racetrack. And according to law enforcement officials, the woman who had lung cancer had been wearing dentures inscribed with the word powders.
So that's all they were going off with. Yeah.
I have a lot of questions. The local police department in Lincoln, Alabama, believed her body might have been dumped by someone who planned to steal her identity to access her finances. Wow. So the company.
I don't really know what they based on, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. The company called Sharon Hallmark, who was a Lincoln police captain of investigations, and Miss Davis gave another $4,000. So Authorn processed some bloodstains that were collected. So
this is crazy.
The Lincoln police captain had Ms. Davis join the cold case task force. This is truly like Kickstarter status where you're like, you know, if you give us $500, you get to come on the podcast or whatever.
So
like Patreon tiers.
And also I am blanking on, unfortunately, where she is, but she's living internationally, Ms. Davis. Like she's not on the boots on the ground there.
Let's get her on the pod.
Honestly, yeah.
That'll be our Patreon tier. If you donate a certain amount of money, you can come on the pod. And then if you donate even more money, we will put you in touch with the local police department.
Oh, God.
So you could solve the case. But no, I mean, our girl went in. Her guest bedroom is now like Detective Central. I'm imagining like string boards, the whole nine.
Full homeland.
So she would try to get DNA matches and then look on verified sites that have people's phone numbers and stuff to not like tip anybody off that she's looking into them.
Isn't that crazy? So whenever there'd be matches, instead of like calling someone to be like, oh, do you know this person? She would just go all online to like those, like, you know how you can like pay to see who's calling you and stuff like that?
Yes.
To get like more details. So she actually, that was smart on her end. So she kind of,
this is sketch. I'm like, that's so bizarre. So in this case, the closest match shared a great-great-grandparent with the victim. So basically starting from there, she learned their family's roots so intimately that she discovered an 1800s era affair between one of the ancestors and a neighbor. But I mean, that's good tea, but how is it helpful?
But I hope you know that was the one line that made me be like, oh, I need to get in on this. Just finding out like century-old drama.
Oh yeah.
please.
Oh, for sure. And then after 5 months, she found where on the family tree the victim had to be, like just this branch with two sisters. She was able to just like genealogically map who this victim was.
And wouldn't that be a good movie title? A Branch with Two Sisters.
I like it.
I'm just saying.
And actually, one of the sisters was alive, so she went to look for her on Facebook, and then she found a post that said, where is Jean? Boom. And so Jean was a retired biology teacher and a grandma who lived in Georgia, and she's been declared missing since July 2013. Her last name was Ponders, so that was probably why they thought it said powders on the dentures. And so Captain Hallmark got contact information for the Ponders family from local authorities. And they also found her daughter, Jennifer, who provided a DNA sample, and it was a match. So now the police are investigating how Ms. Ponders got to Alabama from Georgia. I mean, it's not a far drive, but whatever. And more importantly, who dumped her body like at this racetrack? And of the 24 cases, Ms. Davis has funded, seven previously unknown individuals have been publicly named. including most recently Gary Simpson, a 20-year-old black man from New Orleans whose remains were found in the Mississippi River in 1982. So she's helping to like solve these cases by identifying victims, which is pretty good, pretty cool.
In honor of the new format that we're doing, I think the other new format is that while recording this, the episode crashed 4 times. So my microphone is no longer working. It will be working next week. Sorry about this poor quality.
This is truly cursed, this episode. I think this is a sign that this episode is like cursed and we shouldn't do that anymore. Yeah. But let us know your thoughts.
But anybody who made it to this part, know that me and Sarah both have cried at separate times whilst doing it, just about our lives. And we really thank you for listening.
Yes. I hope you have wine for this episode because you'll need it. I should put a disclaimer up top. Like, this is 10 in the morning, but we need to be your partners in wine for this.
Yeah, deeply. And also, so sorry. Next week I'm excited because we're going to be talking about that new Netflix documentary and we're going to go back to the basics that we know.
The Crypto King, right?
Crypto King, whatever that
means. Yeah, that's going to be exciting. And then after that, there's like a slew. There's so many. I was on, I don't know, I think I was just on like Google News and there's just so many like true crime or just crime related like movies, adaptations. They're doing another Michelle Carter one. I don't know how I feel about that, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, and also because we have to do, we might do one about the starved rock killer because Christina MC.
Yes. That was a good one.
Yeah. So, because, you know, and she, she says that she wants us to cover it, especially because she told her wife, Steph, that she will never wrong her. And we have to do this to keep their marriage intact.
I don't know what that has to do with it.
I don't know. I'm not going to question. I'm not their marriage counselor, but.
You're right. We won't get involved.
Like, I feel like they have to do that, and she would never do it to her spouse.
Yeah,
Stephanie.
No, I think there was also a development with that guy. But I'm down to do that because I watched it. I thought it was pretty good. But otherwise, yeah, definitely keep giving us your suggestions. Please. Some people said Jared Leto's cult. Oh. If you're in Jared Leto's cult and want to talk to us, let us know.
House of Gucci.
But there's not really a lot of info about that yet. Maybe that'll be my master's project. That would be fun. But yeah, if you made it so far in this episode, I mean, thank you. And also, like, apologies.
Thank you. Y'all are the real ones.
Yeah.
Be sure to, you know, just chat with us on the Facebook group, Not Another True Crime Group, or on Instagram, Not Another True Crime. You could follow me at Cashmere Dana, Cashmere with a K.
You can follow me at Sarah Lameem. And we'll be back next week. And our episode will be less cursed, we promise.
Hopefully.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATCPod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.